This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
Biden on Thursday also named U.S. diplomat Timothy Lenderking as the country's special envoy for Yemen in a bid to step up American diplomacy and end the war there.
I've asked my Middle East team to ensure our support for the United Nations-led initiative to impose a ceasefire, open humanitarian challenge, and restore long dormant peace talks.
Welcome back to the show, friend of the show, Shireen. This news today, or yesterday, possibly, this announcement yesterday, it's a game changer. Could you tell us what's happening?
Yeah. Well, first, thanks for having me back. It's a game changer, kind of. Initially, I was really excited because we all heard that Biden was going to announce an end to offensive operations in Yemen. So an end to U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen, essentially. This is, of course, significant because it's been years in the making. You know, activists have worked for 6 years to try to get the U.S. to recognize that what they're doing in Yemen is, you know, genocidal, really, and that we need to end U.S. support for the war if there's any hope for Yemenis on the ground. So the announcement is a positive first step, but I have a lot of concerns and questions after hearing what he actually had to say.
Yeah, so let's get into that. The part of the trick with these Americans, and like I think this happens a lot of times in other, you know, sort of with these situations, is that, you know, you hear the clickbait news, the breaking news, like you hear everybody getting excited, but then, you know, the realities of these things are much more complicated. Like, there's a reason why this war happened, quote unquote war happened in the first place. There's a reason why, like, these bombing campaigns started, and those reasons haven't just gone away, right? Like this is not like no one has changed their positions in terms of, so it's like, so partly you have to ask, okay, so what prompted the Americans to sort of reverse course, and what course are they reversing, if at all? Because as you said, this the language here is a little weird, because they will continue to support defensive weapons, like they're going to continue to sell, which of course, like, Saudi Arabia exists to buy weapons. Like, the whole purpose of Saudi Arabia is to buy things from, you know, imperialist nations, because that's the whole point. That's why it was set up in the first place. It's just like this huge, you know, whatever, right? I mean, it's a bunch of different things, but partly it's to, you know, someone needs to buy these equipment, these $1 billion, whatever, right? Saudi has one of the biggest military budgets in the world. So I guess my question is, what are your doubts? Why? What do you think could change? And worst case scenario, like, is the worst case scenario that this is just some ploy to change this war and intensify it by other means? Because I have seen people sort of respond to it that way, because, you know, we don't trust the Americans for good reason.
I mean, yeah, the fear is that this is a rebranding. If you remember, Saudi started this war in March of 2015. They called it Decisive Storm. A month later, maybe they realized that, you know, storms come and go and nothing had been decisive about their role in Yemen. And so they rebranded it Operation Restoring Hope. And they said that they were going to stop their military operations and now we're going to work toward a political solution. None of that happened. It was a total PR spin. In 2019, the UAE announced that they had in fact left Yemen, and their foreign minister was continuing to propagate those lies yesterday on Twitter to say that they've already left Yemen, when all it was a moving of UAE soldiers on the ground and replacing them with more mercenaries. But the UAE continued to occupy South Yemen, and now Socotra Island. They continue to be in control of Yemen's gas plants, and they have assassinated religious leaders in the south, you know, for politically motivated reasons. They have operated secret prisons, and the list goes on. So, you know, and coming back to the U.S., the U.S. has announced in the past that they are ending the war in Iraq, that they're ending the war in Afghanistan. And, you know, a couple of decades later, those wars haven't ended. And so that's the worst case scenario, that this is some kind of rebranding by the Biden administration in recognition of the incredible you know, pressure. I'm not going to say that they were moved by the humanitarian crisis, because this was already happening in 2015 and 2016, but there's been a lot of pressure building, and this came to be seen as Trump's war in Yemen. And we've worked really hard to try to end U.S. support for the war. So the Biden administration feels the need to respond to activists, to respond to us. But what is he actually saying? He's saying that he is going to commit to continuing to defend Saudi sovereignty and Saudi territories because of Iran, forces, Iranian-backed forces. That is the exact same language almost that President Obama had used to get us into this war. That is the same framing that was used, that the U.S. is entering this war, that they are supporting the Saudi-led coalition in order to defend Saudi territories and Saudi sovereignty from Yemen's Houthis. So if we're back to that framing, this is really problematic. If Biden is saying that he's going to cancel, what did he say, relevant arms sales, that's problematic too. All arms sales need to be over. And if they continue to defend Saudi territories, then what does that mean? Are they going to continue to share intelligence with the Saudis? Are they going to try to lift the blockade? Are they going to continue to provide them with targeting assistance? Maybe the targeting assistance will stop, but what are the other ways that the Biden administration is going to continue supporting the Saudi-led military? Are they going to continue training their forces, repairing their vehicles and aircrafts? And the list goes on. So unless those things are, ended, the war is not going to end for the average Yemeni living in Yemen. They're still under blockade and they're still under, bombardment.
Right. So this is the question. Like there are different facets of this war. And what's interesting that all of the artifice, the fictional bullshit, all the blue check mark lies about a civil war in Yemen have just melted away. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so funny how this was packaged and sold as this civil war, whereas in reality, we're talking about one main faction in the country, political faction united with, I guess it's for you to tell me how legitimate they are in the eyes of Yemenis. I imagine that's contested, but the Ansar Allah or / Houthis, these people came into power, they were voted in, and like that. This has been in a developing relation, like sort of, I don't want to say the word evolving because that adds a kind of historical kind of, normativity, sort of straight line liberalism sort of a spin to it. But like what's happened in Yemen over like the last 20 years and that got accelerated in the Arab Spring, like that this was a response to that. Like this war that they sold as a civil war, which was really a bombing campaign, like then paired with a very violent blockade and then a sort of mercenary third party kind of proxy militia fight on the ground. So this is like this tripartite sort of moving machine. I don't see how cutting sales of specific weapons changes anything.
So to clarify a little bit, the Houthis were not voted in. The Houthis came under... Okay, so back to Arab Spring, Yemenis revolted and they ousted the dictator at the time, Saleh, which led to civil unrest, but promises and hopes that this would kind of come together, people would come together. Hadi was Saleh's vice president. He was appointed. He had a 2-year term. He failed in those 2 years. He was given an extension. He failed. And the Houthis were one of those groups who felt like they were going to try to apply pressure. And so they thought that they would do so by essentially taking over Sana'a and putting him under house arrest. And many people call that a coup. I don't know if the Houthis intended to kind of stay and rule in Sana'a, but they became they made a decision that led to Hadi fleeing and then a civil war erupted. What's happened since March 2015 is not a civil war, because as soon as Saudi Arabia entered, ostensibly, to put Hadi back in power because they care about Yemen democracy, Hadi was not elected. They say that Hadi was elected. Hadi was put and they made a one-man election. One-man elections are not elections. He was appointed by the UN, by the GCC, to bring different groups together. And he has been an utter failure. But the Houthis have not been elected either. And so we have a situation where Saudis and the U.S. realize that they now have a Yemen government, and Yemen has faced a lot of instability, but it was somewhat stable under President Saleh, who was pro-U.S. and pro-Saudi. But they realized that with the Houthi and their, you know, they're explicitly anti-US and explicitly anti-Saudi, that they weren't going to have a friend in Yemen anymore. And this is important because Yemen controls Bab al-Mandeb Strait, right? And so if they don't have a Yemeni leadership that is going to let Saudi do as it pleases in Yemen, as it has historically, or let the US come in and do as it pleases in Yemen, for example, with drone warfare and whatnot that was sanctioned by Saleh, then this was going to be a problem for the Saudis and the Americans. That's why they're at this war. But what they don't realize is that the Houthis are Yemen's issue, right? Like, it's up to Yemenis to decide where their allegiances lie, where their support lies. Clearly, the Houthis enjoy a lot of support within Yemen. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to last 6 years with, you know, virtually no disruption to their rule in northern Yemen, except for, you know, certain spats that happened a couple of years ago with Saleh that led to his killing, but, you know, hasn't led to any instability in northern Yemen, right? And so it seems to me that they have a lot of support within Yemen, but at the end of the day, it's up to Yemenis to decide whether they want the Houthis, whether they want Hadi back, whether the Southerners want to secede from the Union, and, you know, what the role of the Islah Party, the Islamists, would be, if any. That's up to Yemenis. But how can that take place when there are countries like Saudi Arabia and the US and the UAE that are actively bombarding, choosing, you know, Yemen's course for it, you know, dictating to the Hadi government how they should react and how they should respond? And the Hadi government is based in Saudi Arabia and takes its salaries from Saudi Arabia. The, you know, Southern secessionists are backed by the UAE. And so none of this really, that has to, the foreign element has to be completely removed in order for Yemenis to talk to each other, you know, and that will happen. Yemenis are masters of joining forces and rejoining forces and shifting their alliances. I mean, things happen and they'll work it out, but they can't work it out when there's a blockade, when there's bombardment, when there are all these countries involved.
Right. So I appreciate the correction on that, because in the sense that, like, this is partly the crux of the matter is who represents Yemen, right? Like,
right.
The land of Lemon, the people, the last of Lemon, the land of Yemen. Sorry. Like the land of Yemen, the people of Yemen, right? Like, if the story of Ansar Allah, the Houthis, is one of reclaiming sovereignty from foreign-backed sort of Yemeni sort of quislings, who could be called kind of quislings. And I feel that, like, I don't know if this is correct, but, like, it succeeded beyond all imagination. Like, if you're like, you know, it's in the sense that, like, their enemies are so bad and they, like they're so dysfunctional, and, like, because they're obviously quislings of foreign powers. Like, Saleh was obviously controlled from the outside. Mansour Hadi literally lives and on the payroll of the Saudi state. Like, these are power relationships between weaker power and stronger power. But what upset the apple cart, so to speak, is the emergence of the Houthis, the emergence of a unbreakable resistance, right? Like, a resistance that cannot be broken or bent. And so that simple declaration of no in whatever, right? Like, 90s or something. I think the father of the Houthi movement was around in the 90s,
yeah,
or before that even. Like, this has been a long simmering movement, and, like, multi-generational in the family itself, but also this is something that has spread. And I'm telling you this, you know this much better than me, obviously, but, like, to me, though, when something like this happens, when you have foreign outside powers bombing your country, blockading you, sending in mercenaries, if someone, like, if an organization, a group gets together and fights that, like, you look up to them and you say, thank you. Like, you appreciate that. So, like, these Saudis have done, and Americans have done a favor to the Houthis by legitimating them. At least this is in my eyes. I mean, I'm not Yemeni. What the hell do I have to say? But, like, that would be my response, to be like, okay, there are people who bomb me and there are Yemenis who support it and legitimate it, and there are people who fight it. I'm going to go on the side of the guys who fight it.
I mean, if they thought that the Houthis were just going to disappear, this led to, I think, and again, this is hard to know because of the blockade, and but it's, you know, from what it seems to me, that their popularity has expanded in Yemen. And by the way, so did Saleh's popularity. You know, people who revolted against him in 2011 were like, you know, when he did join the Houthis, join forces with the Houthis to defend Yemen from foreign intervention, until, of course, he decided to change course. But in those couple of years where he was working alongside the Houthis to defend Yemeni sovereignty, people who were protesting in the streets against him were like, well, I guess this guy is not so bad after all, right? Look, he's defending Yemeni sovereignty. Sovereignty means a lot to a lot of people, right? You know, people don't want to be living under occupation. Yemen has gone through colonization. The south, where I was born, was occupied by the British for 139 years, right? The north, parts of the north, were occupied by the Ottoman Empire for hundreds of years, right? And so Yemenis have this quest to self-determination, to chart their own course, to not be, you know, clients of any country. Our national anthem, you know, the last line of our national anthem is the world will not see a guardian upon my nation. Like, we take pride in the fact that Yemen is an independent country. And so, yeah, of course, people are going to want to defend themselves. But at the end of the day, you know, whether it's Houthis or another group, it's up to Yemenis to decide. And they just haven't been given that opportunity. They haven't been given that right to self-determination. And they could choose that, you know what, Houthis have committed enough crimes that we don't want them to be representative of us. And that could happen, right? Or they could say, yeah, these guys defended us for the past several years. We want them as our next leaders. But that's not even going to happen when people are still trying to survive at this point, you know? Most people are not fighting. They're just trying to survive. They don't even know where their next meal is going to come from. And I would argue most people are not politically motivated. You know, they just want to live in peace, whatever that means. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that whatever the Saudis thought that they were doing in Yemen, you know, has backfired. Yemen is not going to be welcoming them with open arms. Even the South, which did welcome Saudi with open arms, have seen what Saudi and the UAE have done to the South, you know, between assassinations and instability and the looting of resources and the occupying of islands. They're like, well, if this is what freedom looks like, what does occupation look like then, you know? So I think...
Right, yeah. No, that's a great point. And I feel like, okay, let's say, can we just do like a best case scenario? Like, what does that look like tomorrow? Because there's a bigger issue of, what about the internationally recognized government of Yemen? Because right now, the government that represents Yemen, say at the United Nations, is Hadi, right?
Yeah, it's a puppet government.
Yeah, so, and it always votes, like if you look at their voting record, it's like, what? You're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, it's just a quisling. It's a quisling situation. So like they're not going to recognize, like, what government? I guess there would have to be some sort of transitional council. I know that I remember watching a documentary that's very good that I would recommend to people called Rise of the Houthis. And for, at least from what I could tell in this documentary, it seemed to suggest that there was some kind of, let's say, kind of not negotiation, but a kind of like working through process that people who weren't necessarily part of Ansar Allah or the Houthis, people who weren't necessarily part of that specific movement, could then negotiate with, you know, whoever is, quote, in charge, right? Like I remember I did an interview with somebody, with Nasser Arabiya, who's based in Sana'a, and I said, like, oh, who runs the government? Like, who's the government? And then you're like, oh, because all states have these career, you know, functionaries and people who have these jobs, civil servants, like they operate on their own. They don't necessarily have to work with somebody above them. Like, you can still get your driver's license,
yeah,
if, like, you know, whatever, right? Like, so that's me. But then the big ticket issues, like, okay, do they recognize Sana'a as the government in Yemen? Because then if they could, the Yemeni military could legally purchase arms from Iran, right? Which is not what they want to do. They're not going to allow that. You're going to have like IRGC shipments to Yemen? I don't think so.
Well, they're not going to get through that blockade that's enforced by, right, Saudi, the UAE, and probably even the US. We don't even know that. You know, they won't. The Pentagon won't tell us how much involvement they have. But they seem to find these weapons, supposed, you know, seizes of weapon sales, weapon shipments from Iran to Yemen. And so if they announce it, it means that they have some kind of presence in that area, navally. But Yeah, I think that, you know, the UN needs to recognize that, you know, 6 years later, the Houthis are not just going to give up all of their territories, all of their weapons, and be like, okay, we're just going to go back to northern Yemen, to Sada, which you completely destroyed, and we're just going to let you take over. You know, it's not going to happen. And so some kind of realistic plan needs to exist. And it probably needs to recognize that they are the de facto rulers of northern Yemen. You know, they set up a government and it's functioning, and it's been functioning for the past 6 years. And that needs to happen. They can't just treat them as a pariah. And the Houthis, by the way, have been successful with, Yemen is a very tribal nation. They've been successful with working with local tribes and, you know, winning their approval or negotiating approvals, like you mentioned earlier. And so, again, you leave Yemenis up to it, they will work it out. But if the UN or the US comes and says, well, you know, we're not going to negotiate with the Houthis, we're back at square one, where they are not understanding the reality on the ground. And they're trying to abide by some, you know, resolution in the UN that no longer makes sense 6 years later. They're no longer a rebel group from the north that has no territories. They control areas where 70% of the population lives. And so, good or bad, these are the people that they're going to have to deal with.
Right. So then maybe sort of final question, because I'm sure you're exhausted. You've been on all day. So I'll leave you. I'll listen to the final thing. The South.
Yeah.
What happens here? Because Ansar Allah does not have a strong presence,
no.
Right? Like that's where it's mostly controlled by STC, right?
Right.
Which is the Southern Transition. What is
Southern
that actually?
Transitional Council.
Yeah. So, which is historically been backed by the UAE and not Saudi? Right.
Not Saudi, because Saudi's goal is to have a united Yemen, which is why they're pushing Hadi down everyone's throat. The UAE doesn't care. The UAE just wants to exploit Yemen, right, and its resources. And whatever group will allow them to do that is what they are interested in. And also the UAE doesn't share a border with Yemen, whereas Saudi does. And so Saudi has much more kind of interest in maintaining a united Yemen. But in the South, yes, the Houthis don't enjoy any support in the South. They followed Hadi to the South in 2015, which is what led to this intervention. And they were kind of pushed back to northern areas, but they have been ferociously defending northern Yemen. And so there's a battle over Ma'rib, which is an oil-rich province, which the Hadi government is trying to, wrest from the Houthis. And then there's Taiz. Taiz is kind of like this border between north and south. And they control Bab al-Mandeb Strait. And so that's another strategic location that the Houthis are going to fight for. But, if the STC is powerful in the south and the Houthis have no control in the south and no, popularity in the south whatsoever. My thinking is that best case scenario is that we go back to two countries, you know, North Yemen, ruled by whoever they want to rule them, and hopefully after elections, and South Yemen ruled by STC, if that's what the South wants in a referendum, let's say. But, you know, it's concerning that the STC is backed by UAE. I don't know what that would mean long term. But if the UAE gives the STC legitimacy, they could financially gain from that. And we'll see a divided Yemen again. And Yemen had been divided for many decades until 1990. But that unity was so fraught because it just happened so prematurely and without any, proper vision or, kind of understanding of what this was going to look like after so many years of two different countries divided by colonialists and, evolving into different nations, right? So I think best case scenario is probably a partitioned Yemen. But, that's better than more dead Yemenis. And if that's
what you mean, best case scenario in terms of the realistic scenario.
Realistic scenario.
Right now.
Ideally,
yeah.
You want a united Yemen. You don't want to see your country divided, but I think realistically, it's probably going to be for the best if that's what Yemenis vote for, that we return to two Yemens. If that mitigates the bloodshed, then maybe that's what we're going to see. But again, that's not going to happen until foreign intervention is actually stopped.
And then, of course, it raises the question, like if the UAE pulls out of this of the South and they just let like, what could the STC do without its main backer? Would it just collapse? Yeah. Right? Like, this is the issue, right? Like, what, how strong, I mean, it's politics, right? Like, how strong is your movement? Is it stronger than the guy who's against you? Like, then no, you're going to lose, right? But if you can get somebody else on your side who's stronger than that guy, okay, great. But like, that, it seems to be like, okay, we're at a Gordian knot situation of what do you do with South, the South versus the North. But yeah, I mean, you put it much better.
And I also think that, you know, the STC, I mean, if they're willing to be supported financially by the STC, by the UAE, they're probably thinking, okay, we'll be some kind of client state. We'll benefit, they'll benefit, everyone's going to be happy, you know? Leadership, basically, they're going to be under another master, but they seem to prefer that over unity. That's what they've shown over the past. And this is difficult for me because, you know, I grew up in the South. I, you know, supported secession for a long time because of the evils of Saleh, right? I lived under a war that Saleh initiated and threw my family out of the country for, right? We were displaced because of Saleh. So I understand where the sentiment of secession comes from. What I lost respect for is that it no longer became like a, patriotic cause because they're now backed by this foreign aggressor that has all but destroyed our country, North or South, you know? And that's where I feel like they've lost their purpose. But again, if that's what the South wants, if that's what Southern Yemenis want, then that's what Southern Yemenis should have.
Thank you, Shireen. Thank you for that. This has been really insightful. You're probably tired. Please go to sleep.
I'll try. Great talking to you, Sina.
I hope this is good news. I hope this is good news and not just a rebrand.
I hope so too. Thank you.